The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, man, these NBA playoffs have got really interesting. We already have three matchups set for the conference semifinals, and we had one huge choke in the playoffs. I mean, if you're the number one seed and you go down to a team that is legitimately one of the worst shooting teams in the league, whew. That says a lot. So let's get right into it. Let's start off with the big choke of the Miami Heat versus the Milwaukee Bucks series. Earlier in the week, in game four, Miami eked out a win, 119-114, went up 3-1 in the series, and Jimmy Butler just went off. I mean, this guy, if anybody shows up during the playoffs, it is Jimmy Butler. This guy is just nuts. He dropped 56 points, had 9 rebounds, and he was just on some that night. It was so fun to watch. Actually, his whole playoff series has been fun to watch, but that night was just insane to watch him do that. And not only did he drop 56 points in a playoff game, but he is the first Miami Heat player to score that many points in a playoff game. And that says a lot because LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Shaquille O'Neal all have played for the Miami Heat in playoff games. So that says a lot about what Jimmy Butler's doing. And then so heading into game five, you're thinking, man, the Bucks need this one. And by the way, Giannis played in that previous game, and it wasn't really a bad game from the Bucks. It's just they weren't able to stop Jimmy Butler, and he was just on some. So then in game five, Miami gets the big overtime win, and they win 128-126. But who was it that came into play here? Once again, it was Jimmy Butler. 42 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, and the Miami Heat move on to the Eastern Conference semifinals. And I can't believe it, just because they dominated the Bucks. And in this last game, in game five, the Bucks were just full of so many stupid fucking mistakes. I mean, right before the end of the fourth quarter, right before halftime, they should have called a timeout, didn't do that, so they went into overtime, and then they did the same boneheaded thing at the end of overtime, and Jimmy Butler just scored the game winner, and the Bucks weren't able to capitalize in any way, shape, or form. And it's not like their players didn't show up. Giannis had a double-double in both of those last two games. And then Middleton, he had good games. Brooke Lopez had good games. It's just, in my opinion, it was poor coaching. Budenholzer, I just think, and his job is in question now because, I mean, they're the number one seed. I picked them to win the NBA Finals, and just because they were the best team all season long, and to lay an egg like that against the Miami Heat team that's really not that good. Yes, they played well, and congratulations to them for actually, you know, stepping it up and playing so well in each and every game. But Budenholzer just really shit the bed in this one. And then speaking of coaching, the complete opposite ends here. Eric Spoelstra, give it up to this dude. I remember when he took over for the Miami Heat as the coach many years ago, back when he had the big three, LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. He had all three of them. They won championships. And I remember I was like, yeah, now that LeBron's gone, he ain't gonna do shit. Nah, Eric Spoelstra got his 100th playoff win. That's, I believe he's top five now, all time for playoff wins. So that puts him up there with some great coaches. And like I said, give it up to this guy, because I thought for sure, once LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, once that whole team went away, I figured this guy was going to get fired eventually. He was never going to be anything. He might be a journeyman throughout the NBA. And then boom, where's Eric Spoelstra? No, this guy has been fantastic as a coach for his entire career. And no matter where this Miami Heat team ends up this year, this guy is just a great coach and good for the Heat to actually, he was a nobody. He was a quality control coach, I believe. And he was just, quality control coach is usually just pretty much like put together film for everybody throughout the season. And that's pretty much what he did. And he's now not only the coach, but he's a damn good coach. So shout out to Eric Spoelstra for being the exact opposite of what Mike Budenholzer was. And we'll see. I don't believe the Miami Heat are a team that are going to win a championship. But, good for them. They really took it to the Bucks in this series. They played great throughout the entire series. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do in the conference semifinals. But the Milwaukee Bucks really laid an egg. They choked hard. There was no other way to put it, too. They choked bad. This team, if anything, should be in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they got bounced first round by a Miami Heat team, like I said, who did not shoot well this season. They offensively were one of the worst teams other than Jimmy Butler, but this is the playoffs, y'all, and the Milwaukee Bucks are going to be watching the rest of the playoffs from home. Moving on to the next series, the Lakers versus the Memphis Grizzlies series has been back and forth. Earlier this week, the Lakers got a big overtime win, 117 to 111. LeBron had 22 points, 20 rebounds, and 7 assists, so that's a big deal for a 38-year-old. He still can take over a game, and that's really what he did. In that overtime win, and the Lakers would go up 3-1 in the series. Then on Wednesday night, they really laid an egg and got their asses beat, 116-99. So Lakers lead the series 3-2. Ja Morant had a great game. In the last game, he had 31 points, 10 rebounds, and 7 assists. And it looked like he had injured his knee, but he still came right back out, and he put in the work, and he was a huge reason why we have a game 6 that is going to be tonight, Friday night. And we'll see if the Lakers are able to close it out. I kind of have a feeling we're going to a game 7 just because the Lakers, they're so up and down with this series, and they're just not reliable to me. So I wouldn't be shocked if we end up going to a game 7 and they lose a game 7. But hey, it would be nice if they would actually just close out the series tonight and move on to the conference semifinals. So we'll see what happens in that series. Then another series that ended last night between the Atlanta Hawks and the Boston Celtics. It was like the Celtics did not want this series to end because earlier in the week, Atlanta was able to get a big win, 119 to 117. Trae Young would have 38 points, 13 assists, and 4 rebounds, and the game-winning shot at the end of the game, which was just, it was nice. Boston would have the lead 3-2, but then Boston would finally close out the series last night. They got the win 128 to 120. Jason Tatum had 30 points, 14 rebounds, and then Jaylen Brown had 32 points. It was really just an all-around good game for the Boston Celtics, but it was just weird because the Celtics really should have won this series last game, but they just seem to be trudging along, and I don't know if it's just they were playing down to their opponent and they're just going to get it going this next round, but they're really going to need to step it up in the conference semifinals because that, to me, was not a really good showing because the Atlanta Hawks, not a very good team. I felt like the Celtics really should have dominated this series, and it was kind of like they just barely got by, but they still got the win, and they now have officially moved on to the conference semifinals. Then another series that has wrapped up and has moved on to the conference semifinals, the Denver Nuggets took care of business earlier in the week against the Minnesota Timberwolves, got the win 112-109, so they took that series 4-1. Jokic, wow, triple-double machine. He had 28 points, 12 assists, 17 rebounds. And then Jamal Murray continues to be his right-hand man. He had 35 points. And so the Denver Nuggets have officially moved on to the conference semifinals. Then another series that wrapped up earlier in the week, the Phoenix Suns versus the Los Angeles Clippers. The Suns trounced the Clippers 136-130 and finished that series 4-1. And it's just funny because, like I said, everybody was talking about the Clippers all season long. Like, this was some legitimate playoff contender, and look what happened. Not only did Paul George not play a game in this series, But Kawhi Leonard barely played too. And yeah, he had a torn meniscus, but it's just like, dude, these two guys are so injured all season long, and this is what you get with the playoffs. And so I thought it was amusing that anybody thought the Clippers were a legit contender this year. They got to show you something first. And the Clippers have yet to show us anything in their entire history of their existence. So how about we all stop hopping on that Clippers bandwagon until they actually do something for once? I don't know, maybe actually make a Western Conference Finals, for Christ's sake. But the Phoenix Suns, that team is on some. In my personal opinion, they are the front runner to win the championship because they are on fire. All of their top players are clicking on all cylinders right now. Devin Booker dropped 47 points, 10 assists, and 8 rebounds. But this guy has just been on fire in the first round. So good luck stopping him. And even if you try to stop him, you got Kevin Durant on the other side who dropped 31 points in Game 5. And then you also have DeAndre Ayton, who's having a great season. He had 21 points, 11 rebounds. And Chris Paul, the old dude in the building, still distributing that ball and just making big plays when he needs to. And so the Phoenix Suns have moved on to the conference semifinals, and the Clippers are, as usual, going to be watching the rest of the playoffs from home. And then another series that wrapped up earlier this week, the New York Knicks have officially won a playoff series. That's the first time since, I believe, the early 2000s. So congratulations to the Knicks. They took care of business against Cleveland Cavaliers. They got the Game 5 win, 106-95. So the Knicks took that series 4-1. So not only was that just great domination by the Knicks, but this Cavaliers team, I was disappointed in them. I expected a lot more from them just because all regular season, they played really well. They were just in it every single time, and that Knicks defense just took care of business. They held Donovan Mitchell down, and the Cavaliers just weren't able to get anything going. But Jalen Brunson, that guy's just on fire. Julius Randle did get injured, so we'll see if that affects them in the next series. But he wasn't really that effective in the first series, and it didn't matter because the Knicks have officially moved on to the conference semifinals. And then the last series, which we have a game 6 tonight in the Golden State Warriors versus Sacramento Kings series. This series just continues to be great. The Golden State Warriors snuck out a win in Sacramento, and that was what they needed to do. They got the win 123-116, and Golden State has the lead right now in the series 3-2. Like I said, game 6 is tonight in game 5. Steph Curry, man, this guy is unstoppable. He had 31 points, 8 assists. Klay Thompson is back, y'all. If you thought he was not, at least for the playoffs, he is. He dropped 25 points and has been money. Draymond Green, if you don't like him, too goddamn bad. That motherfucker's still in it. He dropped 21 points and is just locking it down defensively. Just, I personally love Draymond Green. Have always loved Draymond Green. I love his dirtiness. I love his griminess. I love when he stomps on a motherfucker's chest. I love when he punches LeBron in the balls. I love that shit. And his suspension didn't matter anyways, because guess what? They got that win a couple games ago. And then Wiggins had a huge game last game too as well. He dropped 20 points. So like I said, game 6 is tonight. But I feel like Golden State getting that win in Sacramento is a pivotal turning point in this series. I think the Golden State Warriors close this shit out tonight and move on to the conference semifinals tonight. We'll see. Like I said, this has been the best series so far in the NBA playoffs. And we'll see what happens in the conference semifinals. And so let's go ahead and break down the matchups that are currently set for the conference semifinals, beginning with the Western Conference semifinals matchup between the Denver Nuggets and the Phoenix Suns. I have not believed in the Denver Nuggets at all this season. There's just something about them that's really not believable. I just think they rely too much on Jokic, and that's going to show in this series. The Phoenix Suns have way too much firepower, and like I said, they got it going in the first round, and I expect them to keep it going in this in the second round. And I feel like the Suns are going to be way too much for the Denver Nuggets to keep up with. I think they're just going to have too many too once the Suns get to scoring, I don't think the Nuggets are going to be able to keep up. And I have the Suns winning this series in six games. And this series begins game one on Saturday. Then moving over to the Eastern Conference semifinals, first matchup, we have the Miami Heat versus the New York Knicks. I think this is going to be just a fun series to watch. But I think the New York Knicks, they play better defensively. They've been a more consistent team, whereas the Heat have just been up and down, up and down. And even though they dominated the last series, they were up and down in every single game. And I just kind of feel like the Knicks are not a team you want to fuck with right now, especially on the defensive side of things. They really have the edge defensively. And so I have the Knicks winning this series. I think it's going to be a good series, but I think the Knicks are going to win this series in six games and move on to the Eastern Conference Finals. This series kicks off game one on Sunday. And then the last matchup we have set right now currently for the Eastern Conference semifinals, the Boston Celtics versus the Philadelphia 76ers. I think this is going to be a really fun matchup to watch if Joel Embiid is healthy. If he's not healthy, I still think it's going to be a good series, but I just think that's just going to suck if we don't get to see Joel Embiid ball out like we know he can. But I think this is going to be a fun series to watch. If Embiid is healthy and plays at a high level, I think he's the edge in this matchup because he's going to dominate the paint. And I don't really think the Celtics have anybody who can match up well against him. Tyrese Maxey, he went off in the first round, and I expect him to continue that on. James Harden, we'll see if playoff Harden shows up. And what I mean by playoff Harden is the one that disappears. He did pretty well in the first round, so we'll see what happens here in the conference semis, but I just feel like the 76ers are going to have too much for the Celtics to match up against in the paint, and especially because the Celtics really didn't show me much in their first round matchup against the Hawks. While they moved on, like I said, they just kind of trudged on through that one, and they didn't show me much, so I'm taking the 76ers in a close matchup. I've got this one in seven games. And game one of that series kicks off on Monday night. Then moving on to the week of baseball, we had some pretty big accomplishments this week. Starting on Monday, Spencer Strider for the starting pitcher for the Atlanta Braves. Man, this guy, he had a great season last year. He just had a great rookie season, and he is just continuing it on into this year. He had a perfect game broken up in the eighth inning on Monday night in a win against the Miami Marlins, but he did have 13 strikeouts in an 11-0 win, and 81 out of his 101 pitches were strikes. He only gave up two hits, and he had nine strikeouts. He's one of the first Atlanta Braves pitchers to have at least nine strikeouts in nine straight starts. So this guy is just dominating. And like I said, they won 11-0. So even though he had his perfect game broken up in the eighth, like, that's straight domination by this guy. And if you really look at his stats, basically ever since he came into the league, he's in first place in every single category except for one. And right now, Justin Verlander holds the lead by like 0.01% over him in the category. So Spencer Strider just really starting his career off right. Then moving on to Tuesday night, the Tampa Bay Rays suffered their first home loss of the season. They had a 14 home game record win streak, which was a record for the team. But not only for the team, the only time in Major League Baseball that has ever happened was back in the 1800s with like three teams that don't even exist anymore. So basically, the Tampa Bay Rays have the longest home winning streak, which is 14, and a big record, but it was a big loss to the Houston Astros, 5-0. But you can't really hold it against them because, I mean, hello, they still have been the best team in the league, at least so far for the season. Then on Wednesday, Zach Gallen of the Arizona Diamondbacks. This team, they've been back and forth all week with the Dodgers for first place, but they're still right up there, still playing pretty good baseball. And their starting pitcher, Zach Gallen, even though they were pretty bad last year, he was really good. And this year, he's kind of doing what he did last year. Right now, he is rolling with a 28-inning scoreless streak, and that continued on in a win against the Kansas City Royals, a 2-0 win. So they couldn't get a score on him. And last year, he actually had a 44 1/3 inning scoreless streak. So this is just kind of something that he does. He's very consistent with it. And that he's one of the main reasons why the Arizona Diamondbacks have actually been playing really solid baseball this season. I expect them to start falling off, which they kind of have this week, but who knows? I mean, that National League West is not looking good at all so far, but the Diamondbacks have probably been the most consistent team so far, and Zach Gallen is one of the reasons why. And then yesterday, Shohei Ohtani flirted with both a perfect game and hitting for a cycle. This guy is, as I continue to call him, a unicorn, because it's just so awesome to see when he plays. You're just like in awe because what can potentially happen with this guy. And so he did. He had a perfect inning, only threw 3 innings yesterday against the A's. But then in the 6th inning, they really started to break it open on him. And they would eventually score 7 runs, but Ohtani still got his 4th win on the season. And then at bat yesterday, he went 3 for 5 and was a home run short of the cycle. And I mean, when a home run short, he was like a foot short. So he had a single, a double, a triple, and everybody's waiting for it. And he hits it, and even the announcer like thought it was a home run. That's how close it was to a home run, but it was like a foot short of the cycle. So Ohtani showed out, had a huge game yesterday in a big win for the Los Angeles Angels over the Oakland A's 8-7. And moving on to the NFL, because we did have the NFL draft yesterday, the first round at least. Right before the draft started, Lamar Jackson finally got his contract. He signed a 5-year, $260 million extension with the Baltimore Ravens, as he should have. I didn't think for 1 second he was going anywhere else besides the Ravens, because why the hell would you release that talent to anybody else in the league? He did. He got $185 million is guaranteed. He is now currently going to be the highest paid yearly average player at this time. There's going to be more contracts negotiated here probably over the next couple of months. Right now he's going to be earning over $50 million a year. This exceeds what Jalen Hurts, the contract he signed a couple weeks ago. Now he is the $50 million a year man. Now the Baltimore Ravens, it's perfect timing too, because now all they have to focus on is their season. And they've made some big moves this offseason. You know, they signed Odell Beckham Jr. So they finally got Jackson some weapons, and they also got him some weapons last night in the first round of the NFL draft. So let's move on to that. This draft was one of the most shaky, because usually we pretty much know who's going number one, and we kind of did, but not really. And even after that, it was very questionable of what was going to happen. You'd say there were some surprises, but overall, pretty much everybody went who should have went. But this year it was very difficult to predict who was going to go where and what team was going to pick what. So let's just give a rundown on the first round last night. With the first overall pick, the Carolina Panthers selected quarterback Bryce Young out of Alabama. No real shock there. As I said, I personally would have preferred CJ Stroud, but I don't think you could go wrong with Bryce Young if you're able to keep him healthy. He's got a nice arm. He played for Alabama. And if you play for Alabama, I know not every player who comes out of Alabama is the greatest quarterback of all time. I mean, look at Mac Jones. But when you come from Alabama, that's basically a pro football system. And so that's always a good edge to have in the NFL. I kind of feel like the Carolina Panthers have enough really solid coaches. Frank Reich used to be a quarterback. They've got Caldwell as one of their assistant coaches as well, who's an offensive guru. So I feel like this is a good move by the Carolina Panthers. I don't think you could have gone wrong with him or Stroud, especially with what the Panthers have in the works. And they're not the worst team. They have a solid defense. They just have to make a bunch of improvements on the offensive side of the ball. And with Bryce Young, I feel like now they finally have a solid quarterback. I feel like it was a good pick by the Carolina Panthers. Then the number two pick was the Houston Texans. They ended up going with C.J. Stroud, the quarterback out of Ohio State. So I feel like that's a good move for them. As I said, I feel like C.J. Stroud is more of a prototypical quarterback over Bryce Young. But we'll see what happens with the Texans. They're a terrible organization. So, unfortunately, it's usually difficult to assess really solid talent because the Texans just, they've never been consistent. And until they're consistent, you know, kind of like how I was talking about with the Clippers, you can't believe in them until they prove something. So far, the Texans have proven to be one of the biggest laughing stocks in the league. But they did make a huge trade. They moved up to the third position. So they got the second and third pick, and they got both players they wanted. So they picked C.J. Stroud, quarterback at number two. And then they went with Will Anderson Jr., the edge rusher out of Alabama, with the number three pick via trade. Then the number four pick was the Indianapolis Colts. They went with the quarterback out of Florida, Anthony Richardson. Seattle Seahawks were the fifth pick. They picked Devin Witherspoon, cornerback out of Illinois. Then the Arizona Cardinals, they moved down to the sixth pick, and they picked Paris Johnson Jr., offensive tackle out of Ohio State. Number seven pick, Las Vegas Raiders, Tyree Wilson, edge rusher, Texas Tech. Number eight pick, Atlanta Falcons, picked Bijan Robinson, running back out of Texas. Great pick, in my opinion, by the Atlanta Falcons. They should look pretty decent with scoring. Now they got a huge question at quarterback. Who knows? They could potentially make a move for somebody in the second round or the rest of the draft. But they've got a lot of offensive talent outside of the quarterback position, and I think Bijan Robinson only adds to that. Then at the number nine pick, the Philadelphia Eagles moved up to pick Jalen Carter, the defensive tackle out of Georgia. The number 10 pick was the Chicago Bears. They picked Darnell Wright, offensive tackle out of Tennessee, which is a great move because I think they need to work on that offensive line to help keep Justin Fields upright. Then the number 11 pick, the Tennessee Titans, picked Peter Skoronski, offensive tackle out of Northwestern. Number 12 pick was the Detroit Lions. They picked Jahmyr Gibbs, running back out of Alabama. Number 13 pick, Green Bay Packers, picked Lucas Van Ness, the edge rusher out of Iowa. Number 14 pick was the Pittsburgh Steelers. They picked Broderick Jones, offensive tackle out of Georgia. Number 15 pick, New York Jets, picked Will McDonald, edge rusher out of Iowa State. Number 16 pick, Washington Commanders, picked Emmanuel Forbes, cornerback out of Mississippi State. New England Patriots were the 17th pick, Christian Gonzalez, cornerback out of Oregon. And the number 18 pick was the Detroit Lions. They picked Jack Campbell, linebacker out of Iowa. Number 19, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, picked Kalijah Kansey, defensive tackle out of Pittsburgh. The number 20 pick was the Seattle Seahawks, picked Jackson Smith-Njigba, wide receiver out of Ohio State. 21st pick was the Los Angeles Chargers. They took Quentin Johnson, wide receiver out of TCU. 22, Baltimore Ravens picked up Zay Flowers, wide receiver out of Boston College. So as I was saying, the Ravens are trying to get as many weapons as they can for Lamar Jackson, and that helps by signing Odell Beckham Jr. in the offseason and then drafting Zay Flowers, one of the top wide receivers in the draft this year. Then with the 23rd pick was the Minnesota Vikings. They picked Jordan Addison, wide receiver out of USC. Number 24, New York Giants. They drafted Deontay Banks, cornerback out of Maryland. Then at the 25th pick, I was really pissed off because at this point I was like, oh, sweet, because the Cowboys had the 26th pick. I really was hoping they'd get Dalton Kincaid, the tight end out of Utah. But then the goddamn Buffalo Bills moved up one spot ahead of us to the 25th spot, and they drafted tight end Dalton Kincaid out of Utah. And so I was like, god damn it. So at that point, it didn't really matter to me what the Cowboys did. They were the 26th pick, and they picked Mazi Smith, defensive tackle out of Michigan. I like the pick, but I would have liked Dalton Kincaid more, but that was what they had to go with. And I like the move because they need some help in the middle, he's only going to help basically one of their few holes they have on the defensive side of the ball. Then the 27th pick, the Jacksonville Jaguars selected Anton Harrison, offensive tackle out of Oklahoma. Number 28, Cincinnati Bengals. They selected Miles Murphy, defensive edge tackle out of Clemson. 29th pick went to the New Orleans Saints. They picked defensive tackle Brian Brees from Clemson. So two Clemson players right in a row there. Then the number 30 pick was the Philadelphia Eagles. They selected Nolan Smith, edge rusher out of Georgia. And rounding out last night's draft with the 31st pick, the Kansas City Chiefs picked Felix Anudike Uzama. He's an edge rusher out of Kansas State. So the second and third rounds will be tonight. And then the fourth through seventh rounds will be tomorrow. And, you know, there's still some good guys on the board. We'll see what happens with the rest of the draft this weekend. And so now moving on to Trop 5 list this week, going to continue the theme of me ranking greatest of all time. So today it's going to be the Trop 5 greatest boxers of all time. This was a very difficult list to whittle down. The reason why I went with boxers is we did have a pretty big fight last weekend. Gervonta Davis, he got a big win last week. I didn't watch that fight at all, which is why I didn't really break it down or anything, because I don't have any problem with the boxers who fought last week. It's just I'm not really familiar with them, and it wasn't something I was really well versed in, so I wasn't going to discuss it. But it was a big fight. Then this week also we have a new movie coming out called Big George Foreman. It's about one of my favorite boxers, George Foreman. And then next week we have a big fight. The fight I'm looking forward to with my favorite boxer for now. Like, in today's boxing day and age, my favorite boxer is Canelo Alvarez. I love watching Canelo fight. He's just a beautiful fighter and fine as hell, too, so that doesn't hurt. But he's got a big fight next weekend as well, so I felt like this week would be a great time to do my Trop 5 Greatest Boxers. As I said, this was a very difficult list. As a matter of fact, out of all the greatest of all time lists I've done so far, this was the most difficult because there are so many fantastic boxers, and I actually learned about a boxer who I've heard of, but I had never seen a fight of his. I didn't really know much about him. And this is why I'm glad I do these lists, because I learned a lot about this guy, and I was shocked and in awe at what an amazing boxer he is, and he is on my list, and I didn't even know about him until, like, this week when I started compiling the list, and I'm glad I did. But, I mean, there's so many boxers I couldn't include on this list. That's why it's only Trop 5, because if I expanded it to 10, I would probably still be working on the fucking list right now. So I whittled it down to 5, because 10 was too much. I mean, I had to leave out guys like, I'm sorry to my friend Simon, I had to leave out his favorite boxer, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and I could have put him in there. I almost put him at 5. I really almost did. If I was making a Trop 10, I probably would have put him at 6, maybe 7, but that dude was a beast. I left out Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson, one of my favorites. I love Mike Tyson, but he was more of just a knockout artist. And while I'm not trying to say he didn't have any good skills, it's just that's what he was really about, with the boom, the knockout. He wasn't as technically sound as some of these guys. And also his career had its ups and downs, and it just wasn't as consistent as some other boxers. But he is great and one of my favorites. I also left out guys like, because I'm not as hung up on records as some people are. Going undefeated, it's an amazing accomplishment, but the two guys who are undefeated, they would probably make my 10, but they didn't make the Trop 5. And that is, of course, Rocky Marciano excellent boxer. He's undefeated. He was the first like undefeated boxer, and his record stood until Floyd Mayweather Jr. Broke the record. But Rocky Marciano, he fought great boxers in his era, but some of them were like at the end of their career, and so some of his fights weren't as impressive for his record, but he was a great boxer. And then, as I said, Floyd Mayweather Jr., the only gripe I've ever had about his career, because don't get me wrong, in my personal opinion, Floyd Mayweather Jr. has the most beautiful technical boxing skills you will ever see. Defensively, offensively, he just knows how to just bounce around, and he's just great at it. He was born to box, that's for damn sure. But he fought a lot of dudes at the wrong time. You know, he didn't fight them at the peak. And so that, to me, I did hold that against both him and Marciano when I was breaking down my top five. But those are some of the guys that could have easily been here. And it was, like I said, very, very, very difficult for me to get this in there. So a couple of my parameters outside, like I said, I wasn't as hung up on record. But by that, I mean undefeated. These guys in my top five have excellent records. One of these dudes, I can't believe how many fights he fought. But these guys, they have amazing, stellar records. Not undefeated, of course, but their record, it definitely came into play. Also, their domination of their specific era. All five of these guys fought the best. They fought the best in their era, no question. Two of them, really, they fought in the same era. And then there were other guys in that era where you're like, oh, man, you guys were excellent. And then, of course, like I said, you had to have fought the best of that era. And you had to have fought them at their peak, at their best in their era. And then I also didn't include any of the guys who were in it, who are still boxing. Like I said, I feel like Canelo, however much longer he goes, he could be considered one of the greats, especially if he keeps fighting at the rate he does. Because one of the things I love about Canelo, he doesn't take a lot of time off. He pretty much, I think he does about at least three fights a year. And that's not common these days. But I just love the pace he works at. And he doesn't like to back down from dudes, and he likes to fight the best. So I feel like eventually, when his career is all said and done, he could potentially be one of the greatest boxers of all time. Also, Tyson Fury, he's another guy who I love, who I feel like, even though he technically is retired, I kind of feel like when a boxer retires, you need to give them a couple years, because sometimes they come right back into it. So I kind of left out those two, just because I feel like they could add to their legacies and potentially vault themselves up here. So let's get into my top five greatest boxers of all time, beginning with number five, Sugar Ray Leonard. He boxed from 1977 to 1997, off and on. Unfortunately, his record is not... He would have way more fights if it wasn't for some really bad injuries he suffered throughout his career. He fought a total of 40 times. His record is 36 wins, 3 losses, and one draw. 25 of those wins were due to knockout. And he won titles in 5 weight classes. He was the lineal champ in 3 weight classes. He was the undisputed welterweight champ. He also is a gold medalist. He's in the Boxing Hall of Fame, of course. As a matter of fact, all 5 of these guys are in the Boxing Hall of Fame. He was actually, in my opinion, one of the first, like, big-time boxers. You know, he was the first to actually earn a $100 million purse. And so that's what I mean. Like, he was the first to really start making some good money off of this. He was also in one of the greatest decades for boxing as well. He was basically a part of like the 4 greatest boxers of this era in the 80s, between him and Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Hearns. These guys were the tops. They were the supreme, and they fought each other all the time, and they were great fights. And so in the 80s, it was excellent watching those 4 back and forth with each other. But at this time, the boxer of the decade in the 80s was Sugar Ray Leonard. He was also the fighter of the year in 1976, 1979, and 1981. He won his 27, he won his first 27 fights to start his career, and his first loss was his 28th fight against Roberto Duran. So Sugar Ray Leonard, like I said, if he didn't suffer so many injuries throughout his career, he would have fought a lot more, and he probably would have won a lot more. As a matter of fact, he probably would be ranked right up there with Muhammad Ali. It's just that his career was just, it just had too many ups and downs to it, and just the injuries really held him back. But, I mean, he was an exciting fighter to watch. Some of his fights, man, you're just like, this is beautiful boxing. And he just, he really took over. He really dominated his era, and that was a good era to be dominating in as well. Then at number four, I'm going to drop five greatest boxers of all time. A lot of people don't rank him this high. I know I'm biased, but it's George Foreman. He is my favorite boxer of all time. I've always loved George Foreman. I actually have a personal story with George Foreman. I was born in San Jose, California, and lived there till I was about five. And I was born in 1985. So when George Foreman was getting ready to make his comeback, he came back in 87. George Foreman's career was from 1967 to 1977. Then he retired in 77, came back in 87, but basically made his real comeback in 94 through 97. But in 87 is when he made his comeback. And so in this time, we lived next door to his trainer. And my grandpa was a huge George Foreman fan as well. So I honestly don't know the exact parameters of what really happened, but we found out that the trainer lived next door, and George Foreman actually used to do laps in my swimming pool while he was training for this this period of time. And I even have a picture of me on George Foreman's shoulder. So that's my personal little story I have about George Foreman, and so that's kind of one of the reasons why I've always loved him, because that's just cool that he swam in my freaking pool, for Christ's sake. And also, he just was a great boxer. Now, George Foreman was all about the knockout. This guy is probably the hardest hitter ever in boxing. It's tough to say that because Mike Tyson, he also had an amazing amazing punch. And, you know, when I said Foreman came back in 87, his intentions were to fight Mike Tyson because he felt he could beat Mike Tyson. Can you imagine if those two fought each other? Oh, that's a fight we all have missed out on. Like, the two hardest hitters. Because when Mike Tyson fought, it was like he wanted to turn your head into dust. And George Foreman was the same. Like, if you watch old George Foreman training videos, his trainer would be holding the punching bag, and Foreman just takes one fucking hand and pummels the crap out of this punching bag, and his trainer goes flying because he just hits it so hard with one hand, one right hook to the freaking punching bag, and his trainer is flying. So George Foreman was just known for being big, imposing, and would knock your ass out. He fought 81 fights in his career, won 76 of them, lost 5, 68 of those fights were knockouts. He was the heavyweight champ. He first really broke into boxing with his first fight against Joe Frazier. Joe Frazier was undefeated at the time, and he knocked his ass out. And George Foreman came in like a wrecking ball. And he's also a gold medal winner. In amateurs, he was a killer in the amateurs as well. That's where he really made it. And that's why I said, when he came up and knocked out Joe Frazier, people were kind of surprised, but not really that shocked. One of the biggest things, though, about George Foreman, I mean, like, he fought some greats. Not only did he fight Joe Frazier, but in my opinion, he was a part of the greatest fight of all time. And that is the Rumble in the Jungle. Now, I'll get more into it when I start talking about Muhammad Ali, because obviously Muhammad Ali is in my top five. He should be in everybody's top five. He doesn't have to be number one, but if you do not have Muhammad Ali in your top two, three. You don't know boxing. But anyways, we'll get more into that fight. But the Rumble in the Jungle, man. George Foreman was kicking the crap out of Muhammad Ali. And just Ali got this second win and knocked George Foreman out. And big George Foreman. They call him big for a reason because he's just so imposing. But he got knocked out by Ali. He fought a couple more fights, and then he would that would be his first retirement from the sport. And then, like I said, he would come back in 87. But 1994 is when he really, from 87 to 94, he was just slowly building it up, fighting lower tier boxers. And then in 94, he went back for his heavyweight belt that he lost to Muhammad Ali many, many, many years ago. And at the age of 45, George Foreman would become the oldest heavyweight champion of all time. He would knock out 26-year-old Michael Moore, not that fat fuck director Michael Moore. No, an actual boxer Michael Moore who, man, it would actually be fun to watch these two guys not kick the crap out of that dumb shit director Michael Moore. Ugh, don't even get me started on how much I hate that sack of shit. But anyways, I digress. Back to actual things that matter, like boxing. But, George Foreman knocked this guy out in the 10th round. And, Foreman looked old. He definitely looked old in this, but he knew if he just got the knockout in, that's all he needed was just the one solid punch. And that is what he did. He delivered that blow in the 10th round, knocked Michael Moore to the fucking ground, and became the oldest heavyweight champion of all time. He would hang on to that belt for a couple more years, and then he would finally retire in 1997. He would actually start his career off by winning his first 40 fights, and then his first loss actually came to Muhammad Ali in the Rumble in the Jungle. So George Foreman, my favorite boxer, had a stellar career, and he is at number 4 on my top 5 greatest boxers of all time. Then number 3 on my top 5 greatest boxers of all time, Roberto Duran. He boxed from 1968 to 2001. He fought in 119 fights. 119 fights! And his record was 103 wins and 16 losses. 70 of those wins were to knockout. In the 1970s, this guy dominated the 1970s so bad, he went 54-1 in the 1970s. This guy was a freaking killer of his era. He is one of the, two boxers it is, that have fought over 5 decades. Yeah, 5 different decades this guy fought from. He won 4 titles in 4 different weight classes. And he just, as I was talking about Sugar Ray Leonard, he was in that era with him, Hagler, and Hearns. These guys dominated that era. And I mean, he, like I just said, fought in 5 different eras. But and dominated really in the 70s, but the 80s, he was right there with them. And, they just dominated it. And he was such a, like, I would compare his kind of fighting style to, like, the Tasmanian Devil, where it was like, you just didn't expect this guy to dominate like he did. And he just come right out of the corner and just pummel you like no other and just knock you out, and he would just move on. And I mean, when I see somebody fights over 100 times in their career, you gotta give it up to that guy. And he fought all the way until the bitter end, and when he retired in 2001, of course, he's also in the Boxing Hall of Fame. And he's definitely considered one of the greats in most everybody's eyes. He actually started his career winning his first 32 fights. His first loss was to Esteban de Jesus. And I mean, really, his 16 losses is mostly just because the dude just kept on fighting. And he kept fighting until he was 50 years old. He fought till he was 50. So, I mean, you're going to suffer some losses towards the end of your career if you're still fighting in your 40s and 50s. You know what I'm saying? But even so, Roberto Duran was just, he was something else. And to dominate as long as he did, to fight as long as he did, and the fighters that he fought in all of the eras. I mean, like I said, not only did he fight the greats of the 80s, but he fought some greats in the 70s. And he just really is one of the most dominating and fun boxers to watch of all time. Then at number 2 on my top 5 greatest boxers of all time, Muhammad Ali. He fought from 1960 to 1981. He had 61 total fights in his career, 56 wins, 5 losses. 37 of those were to knockout. Of course, he did have the 4 years he was not allowed to box with his conscious objection to the Vietnam War. I don't give a shit about any of that crap on either side, whether you think he's awesome or whether you think he's a piece of crap. I don't give a shit about those kind of things because politics do not matter to me in any way, shape, or form. I only care about Muhammad Ali and what he did in the ring. And I at first, when I thought about this list, I'm like, well, of course, Muhammad Ali is going to be number one for me. Until I saw number one. He's number two for me. And that's just because there has been nobody like Muhammad Ali still to this day. I mean, he was so brash. He really said some fucked up shit, too, about his opponents. And his opponents would do the same thing. But man, Muhammad Ali, there is no way that dude could exist in today's era of pussydom. With some of the shit he would say about his opponents. Anyways, he was a gold medalist, of course, inducted into the Boxing Hall of Fame. But it was just really his straight-up domination. He fought everybody. He was not afraid to fight. And like I said, the Rumble in the Jungle is, if you have never watched the Rumble in the Jungle, do yourself a favor and watch it. I mean, George Foreman is beating the crap out of Ali. I remember when I watched it for the first time, and I knew that Foreman lost. And I'm like, and as I'm watching it, I'm like, how does Foreman lose this shit? Because just his domination. But all of a sudden, Ali gets this second win, and the rope-a-dope, you know, that's what he was known for. And you know, he did some of that in this one, and he came back and knocked out big George Foreman in the prime of his career, too. Foreman was in his prime. Ali wasn't in his prime anymore, but he was still damn good, obviously. But he got the second win, and he did that many times. But also, he would showboat in the ring, which would always be hilarious. I love watching some of his older stuff when he would literally dance. He'd be dodging punches and then be like dancing, like, haha, bitch, you can't get me, and then knock a motherfucker out. Or when he would knock a motherfucker out, he'd stand right over them with a big old smile, like, bitch, I beat you. And he just was a really, really fun boxer to watch. And like I said, he fought some of the best. He fought Joe Frazier. That was one of his biggest rivalries in boxing. They did the Thrilla in Manila. That's another amazing fight. They fought in the Philippines in 100 degrees. It was 100 degrees. So, I mean, you're already sweaty as fuck if you're boxing. So imagine what it's like boxing in 100 degrees. And even Muhammad Ali said himself, it was like being in hell. He didn't even want to rewatch it because his quote was, I don't want to relive what it's like being in hell. So even though he won, and man, it's crazy because like he and Joe Frazier are just trading barbs back and forth to start. But then as the fight goes on, Ali gets a cut over, forces a cut over Frazier's eye, and then so that starts to bleed into his eye, and then his face starts getting swollen. And I mean, as this fight rolls on, like, Frazier don't look like Frazier anymore. He is looking like Mr. Swollen Face. And Frazier's corner would throw in the towel, and Ali would get the win. But to start Muhammad Ali's career, he won his first 31 fights, his first loss to Joe Frazier. But I mean, Muhammad Ali was basically born to box at every single level. He started boxing at 12 years old, and basically he won everything. He was a golden glove award winner at basically every level of boxing. Like I said, he's a gold medalist. And then once he hit the scene, he just was known as the greatest boxer basically of his era, of all time for sure. And he just was something else. The end of his career, obviously, if you don't know, he had Parkinson's disease. And the reason why he had Parkinson's disease is because he fought too long. He probably should. There was a point in his career towards the end of his career. Let's see, he retired in 81. So I believe it was in 77, like his main doctor basically told him he needed to retire. He told him to go fuck himself, and his doctor quit. And so he fought on a couple years too long. As a matter of fact, his last fight, it sounds actually very sad. I can't recall the name of the boxer who kicked the crap out of him, but he basically got the crap kicked out of him. Even like boxing aficionados and sports writers and stuff who were there, they said that was not what we expect to see from Muhammad Ali. It was like watching a shell of his old self. And he actually broke the rules because at the end of the fight, literally right after the fight, his team gave him painkillers and antidepressants after the fight. And you need to take your analysis before that happens. And that's one of the reasons. It was a very kind of sad ending to his career, because even in his last couple of fights, he was starting to stutter and he was shaky. And so I can imagine kind of how sad it was to see the end of Muhammad Ali's career, even though when I personally hear that, because I'm a big sports fan, and one of the things I do like about athletes and what I marvel at is what they will do to win and to be a champion and to fight that long, even though you basically know you're going to die because you're fighting. I have respect for that. I know a lot of people, they don't. They think, yeah, that's bad. You should want to live till you're like 9,000 years old. And I just look at it and I go, you know what? Muhammad Ali, in my opinion, lived a great life. I mean, obviously outside of the racism and that kind of bullshit, but I mean, he's gone down in history as one of the greatest boxers of all time, if not the greatest. Because I can't argue with somebody wanting to put him at number one, even though he's not my number one. But I mean, he had a great career. He had he's still known to this day. And he did many great things throughout his life. So in my opinion, even though boxing is why he's dead, so fucking what? He lived a great fucking life and did great things by being a boxer. And I say, shout out to you, Muhammad Ali, for living your best fucking life, being the greatest at your sport and doing that. And I personally have mad respect for that, because that's just a whole other level of being an athlete. And when somebody puts their all into it, especially boxing, because really, if you do look at the history of most boxers, their post-boxing career usually ends up pretty sad. There are very few Floyd Mayweathers, if you will. You know, Floyd Mayweather's prospering post his career, and he walked away without really suffering any major injuries or anything, and he had a great, fantastic career. That's not how most people's career ends, especially in the early years of boxing. But yeah, you will notice that a lot of them do die early due to a lot of the brain injuries, because I'm sorry if you're getting pummeled, that's what's going to happen. But they choose to do it. And if they choose to do it, that's on them. And like I said, I have respect for it. I'm going to keep watching it. And shout out to Muhammad Ali for being one of the greats. And I was surprised, though, he was not my number one, because number one on my top five greatest boxers of all time, I didn't know who he was. I have heard of him, but I'd never watched one of his fights. I didn't. When I saw his record and how many fights he has fought in his career, I was like, whoa. And then I watched highlights of his, and I was even more in awe. So my number one is Sugar Ray Robinson. He fought from 1940 to 1965, which is obviously why I've never seen him box. But I'm a person who loves to watch old fights. I'm actually a person who's actually annoyed that ESPN Classic no longer exists, because they used to show old fights all the time. And that's where I would watch a lot of old fights, and they show the whole thing. It's not like a highlight reel. It's the entire fight. And I love watching old boxing. I could watch the Rumble in the Jungle probably once a month or once a week. I know what happens, but I could watch it all the time, just because boxing is just, it's fun to watch. It's a beautiful sport, in my opinion. And so I'd never seen Sugar Ray Robinson. I was surprised, because I watched a lot of ESPN Classic, but I'd never seen him fight. And so when I started doing the research, and he's number one on probably most lists, it switches back and forth between him and Ali for the most part on most lists. But when I saw him, I was like, well, I got to do more research on this. But when I saw his record, this dude fought 201 fights. When I saw that, I was like, okay, no wonder why people put him up there. I mean, his record speaks for itself, too. He has 174 wins, 19 losses, six DQs, and then two no contests. And 109 of those wins were due to knockout. This guy was consistent as all hell. As a matter of fact, he is considered the first, like, superstar athlete. He was known for being flashy and just, I guess he lived in New York and was just a real flashy guy. So he was that dude back then. And I didn't know about him. So when I started doing my research on Sugar Ray Robinson, I was like, okay, he is number one on my list. Especially after I went and watched some highlights. I was in such awe of this dude with the highlights. I was like, actually loading a bowl in my bong of weed. And, you know, I could do multitask at the same time. Usually I do. And as I'm getting ready to open up my bag of weed and I'm starting this these highlight reels on Sugar Ray Robinson, I actually put down my weed because I'm like, whoa, this guy. No wonder why people rank him at number one. The way to describe this guy in the ring is a fucking hurricane. Holy goddamn hell, this guy is hands. You can't see him, he's so fucking fast. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. This guy is 100% number one on my list. Muhammad Ali, entertaining as hell. Sugar Ray Robinson, even Muhammad Ali called him the best of all time. So if Ali's got something to say about you in a positive way, that means something. But beyond what I watched highlight-wise, if you haven't seen Sugar Ray Robinson fight, do yourself a favor and Google him on YouTube. They've got a bunch of highlight reels. That guy was amazing. So Sugar Ray Robinson, like I said, fought from 1940, 1965, had 201 fights, 174 wins, 19 losses, six DQs, two no contests. So he started his career with a 40 win fight streak, and after that he would go on a 91 win fight streak. I mean, this guy, it was like win, then he would lose, then he went on a 91 win fight streak, which I think is fifth or sixth all time. So yeah, believe it or not, guys have won over 100 times in a row, which is just crazy. But this was like the first real deal boxer you will ever see. And even after he lost, after the 91 fight streak, after he lost that, I mean, he would go on to have a bunch of really nice winning streaks up until the end of his career. But he was a 5-time middleweight champ. He was the 1950 Fighter of the Decade. He was the Fighter of the Year in 1942 and 1951. And like I said, this guy was something else. I don't even really know how to put it into words because I was just so blown away where I was like, whoa, how did I not know about this guy? Because like I said, when I started this list, I'm like, Muhammad Ali, number one, right off the bat. That's what I thought. And then I'm like, wait a second, who's this Sugar Ray Robinson guy? Then I start doing research on him. I'm like, oh, wow, look at those stats. Turn on the highlights, that changes every motherfucking thing. Sugar Ray Robinson, still to this day, in my opinion, the greatest boxer of all time. He is why we have boxing. And just, whoa, just to watch him in the ring, it's mind-blowing. It's really difficult to explain because it's the first time I've ever seen this guy box. And he's been long dead. Long freaking dead. Yeah, I was shocked. And that's why I'm happy I do these lists, because sometimes even I, a huge-ass sports fan whose life has revolved around sports, even I learn new things and discover new athletes. And Sugar Ray Robinson, I am thrilled to have learned about you, and you are not the greatest boxer of all time, hands down, in my opinion. But Y'all, so if somebody wants to come at me and say, nah, Ali's number one, I really can't argue with that, because Ali's impact on the sport of boxing, it can't be touched. To me, Ali is like how Michael Jordan is with basketball. When you think of basketball, even though Michael Jordan hasn't played in a million freaking years, you still think of Michael Jordan. You still talk about Michael Jordan. You still hear about Michael Jordan. Before Tom Brady became the greatest of all time in football, you still hear about Joe Montana. It's not like he's the worst. It's not like he's crap. But, I mean, you still hear about Joe Montana, and the dude hasn't played in freaking forever. Babe Ruth, still hear about the dude and his impact on baseball, and he played in the early freaking 1900s. So when you make this type of an impact on a sport like Muhammad Ali did, I can't argue if you want to put him at number one. But, man, Sugar Ray Robinson, 201 fights, it's not even just that record. It is not even just that record. Turn on some highlights and you will be in awe. If you're a boxing fan, man, I mean, obviously, if you're not a boxing fan, you're probably not going to enjoy any of it. But if you're a casual boxing fan, or if you're like me and you didn't know who the hell Sugar Ray Robinson is, do yourself a favor. Look the dude up. Like I said, compare him to a hurricane. That, whoa, just whoa. And so that is today's Trop 5 list, my Trop 5 greatest boxers. As I said, number 5, Sugar Ray Leonard. Number 4, George Foreman. Number 3, Roberto Duran. Number 2, Muhammad Ali. And number 1, Sugar Ray Robinson. Glad I found you. Anyways, guys, we have a great weekend of sports. We have baseball. We have playoff basketball. And NFL freaking draft. So all three major sports in action this weekend. I hope you all enjoy it, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.